Welcome back to the Deep Dive. You know, we're always swimming in data, right? From work spreadsheets to those endless cat videos. But have you ever stopped to think about what's below the surface?
Right.
You sent in a ton of material on data types and structures. So today we're diving deep to help you become, well, kind of a data whiz. Get ready to unlock the secrets of how information is organized, you know, from those neat and tidy rows and columns to massive video files that just eat up your phone storage.
That's right.
Joining us today is an expert in data management and analysis. Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Thanks for having me. Thrilled to be here. You know what's fascinating to me about data is it's not just about numbers and spreadsheets. It's about understanding the stories that they tell.
Oh, I love that. Okay, so let's jump in. One of the sources you sent in uses this really cool example, pet records at a vet clinic. They show how each piece of information about a pet, like its name, breed, and weight, it's a data element, like a tiny building block of knowledge.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. And just like we use different types of building materials for different structures, we use different data types to categorize and store information. So Fido's name would be a text data type, while his weight would be numeric.
So it's all about putting data into the right buckets. But here's where it gets really interesting. The source highlights how even a tiny typo can really mess things up. They give this example of accidentally typing M-N-E-O-N-T-A-N-A instead of Montana. Who hasn't done that, you know, on their keyboard?
Well, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
And that's where the concept of strong and weak typing comes in. Databases, those systems designed for managing tons of data, are like strict rule followers. They force you to use the right data type. Think of them as the grammar police of the data world. But spreadsheets, which are more like free spirits, you know, they let you type almost anything into a cell.
So databases are like that super organized friend who color codes their entire closet, while spreadsheets are more go with the flow.
Exactly. And that flexibility can be great, but it also means you might not catch that Montana typo right away.
Yeah.
And it could lead to, you know, all sorts of problems down the line, like sending important mail to the wrong state or miscalculating shipping costs.
Yikes. Okay, so databases are super accurate, but maybe a bit less user-friendly, while spreadsheets are easy to use but prone to, sneaky little errors.
Precisely. It all comes down to choosing the right tool for the job. Now let's talk about structured data.
Ah, yes, the world of neat rows and columns, like those pet records we were talking about.
Exactly. Structured data is all about organization and consistency. It's like having a perfectly arranged library where every book has its designated spot. And within this structured world, we have different data types for different purposes.
Okay, so tell me more about those data types.
Well, we have character data for storing text, like addresses or those product codes you see on price tags. Then there's numeric data, which can be whole numbers like an inventory count, or numbers with decimals like Fido's weight. We also have specific types for dates and times because, you know, accurately recording a pet's birth date is different from, say, tracking a package delivery in real time.
Right. You wouldn't want those two to get mixed up. What about money? That's always important.
Absolutely. And that's where currency data types come in. What's interesting here is how currency is displayed for us humans is different from how it's actually stored, you know, within a database.
Oh, tell me more.
Well, using a more general numeric data type for currency can actually be a good thing. It might seem counterintuitive, but it can help avoid those pesky rounding errors that can add up over time. Imagine a bank accidentally rounding down everyone's interest payments by a fraction of a cent. It might seem insignificant at first, but over millions of transactions, it could add up to a huge loss.
Wow. I never realized how much thought goes into just choosing the right data type. Like, those tiny details can have this, ripple effect. But I gotta admit, I'm kind of fascinated by, the opposite end of the spectrum. Unstructured data, it just seems like the wild west of information.
It really is. And it actually makes up the vast majority of data out there. Think Wow. about digital images, audio recordings, videos, all those things that don't fit neatly into those rows and columns.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. So how is it even stored? It can't all be crammed into spreadsheets, right?
You're right. Unstructured data requires a different approach. It's often stored as binary data, which is like the raw code that computers use to represent everything from images to even spreadsheets themselves.
Wait, so even spreadsheets, those champions of structure, are ultimately built on this more free-flowing binary code? That's kind of trippy.
It is. But spreadsheets aren't great at handling binary data directly. They're more for that structured stuff we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
For those mountains of unstructured data, we need something a bit more, robust.
I'm all ears. Tell me more.
Well, that's where databases with specialized data types come in. They have things like BLOBs, which stands for binary large objects.
BLOBs, I love the name. So these BLOBs are like giant storage containers for all that unstructured data.
You got it. They can hold massive amounts of binary data like images, audio files, and videos. But let's break down how these different types of unstructured data are actually handled.
Okay, I'm ready for the breakdown.
So let's start with audio. When you record something, the sound waves are captured, digitized, and then stored as binary data. Sometimes this data gets compressed to save space, kind of like zipping up a file.
Makes sense. What about images? I imagine resolution plays a big role in storage size, right?
Absolutely. A high-resolution image needs a lot more storage than a low-res one. And what's really cool is that AI can now analyze images to identify objects or even emotions.
Wow, that's incredible. I bet video files are even bigger storage hogs than images, though, right?
You bet. Think about it. Video is essentially a sequence of images strung together, so the storage needs are massive. One of your sources has a table comparing the storage requirements for images, audio, and video, and the difference is, well, dramatic.
Okay, so video streaming definitely deserves its reputation for gobbling up bandwidth. What about large text files? I know those can get pretty hefty, too.
Oh, absolutely. Think about things like transcripts, legal documents, or even like all the text on the internet. These files can be massive and need specialized data types like CLOBs, character large objects, to handle all that information.
CLOBs, another great name. So it's like we have these massive libraries dedicated to storing text, these giant warehouses for images and videos, and all of it is built on this like underlying binary code.
It's a pretty incredible system when you think about it.
Yeah.
But what about the data that doesn't quite fit into these, you know, neat categories? What about information that's not as organized as a spreadsheet, but still has some structure?
Yeah, I'm curious about that too. Like, where does email fit in? It has some structured elements like the sender and subject, but the message itself can be anything.
That's a great example. And it brings us to the world of semi-structured data. Email is a perfect example because it has those structured headers like the sender and subject, but the body can be unstructured text and you could attach any type of file.
So email's like this, like hybrid data creature. A bit of order and a bit of wildness.
Exactly. And to manage all this data, structured, unstructured, and semi-structured, we need ways to, well, move it around and analyze it effectively. That's where file formats come in.
Okay, I'm ready for a file format rundown. What are some of the, like, most common ones out there?
Well, let's start with the simplest .txt files. They're limited to alphanumeric characters, but they're super portable. You can open a text file on almost any computer.
So they're like the universal language of data?
You could say that. Then we have delimited files like CSVs and TSVs. These use commas or tabs to separate data elements. We think back to our pet records.
Mm.
Those could easily be stored in a CSV file.
Right. Each line in the file would represent a pet with commas separating those different data elements. Simple, but effective.
Exactly. Then there are fixed width files, which are a bit old school. They assign a specific width to each column, which can be tricky to manage, especially with data that, you know, varies in length.
Sounds kind of like trying to squeeze a bunch of different size packages into a mail slot.
Kinda.
Yeah.
But thankfully, we have more modern formats like JSON and XML. These use tags or special characters to add structure to text files, making them easier for both humans and, well, machines to read.
So it's like giving those text files a little intelligence boost.
Yeah, exactly. And JSON is especially popular these days because it's lightweight and, well, easy to work with.
And then there's HTML, the foundation of the web. I know it uses tags to structure web pages, but I'm curious, does it play a role in data exchange too?
It does. While HTML is mainly for displaying information in web browsers, it can also store data in tables and even embed images and videos.
So HTML is like the like multi-talented performer of the data world. It can display, it can store, it can do it all.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
And understanding these different file formats is crucial for anyone working with data. They're the key to unlocking insights from all sorts of sources.
This is all incredibly fascinating. We've covered so much ground already. Different data types for structured and unstructured data, those hybrid, semi-structured formats, and now this whole world of file formats. My brain is buzzing.
I know, right? It's a lot to take in, but it's so important to understand these concepts, especially in today's, you know, data-driven world. We're constantly bombarded with information, and knowing how data is organized and analyzed helps us, you know, make sense of it all.
Absolutely. But before we overload our listener, let's take a quick break and come back to wrap things up. Stay tuned.
And we're back diving deeper into the world of data. We've covered a lot of ground, but there's still so much to explore.
I'm ready for more. File formats were really interesting, but the source also mentioned something called object storage, which sounds pretty intriguing. What's the deal with that?
Object storage is a way of storing data, especially those massive unstructured files, as individual objects. Each object is like a self-contained package, holding the data itself, along with metadata that describes what's inside.
So it's not about rows and columns anymore, more like a digital treasure chest.
Exactly. Think of it like storing things in a virtual warehouse. Each item in the warehouse is an object with a unique identifier, like a barcode. You don't need to know exactly where it is in the warehouse, just its ID, and you can retrieve it.
And the metadata is like a label on the box telling you what's inside, when it was stored, and, you know, any other relevant information.
Precisely. Object storage is fantastic for handling huge amounts of unstructured data like images, videos, and audio files. It's also very scalable, so you can easily add more storage as your data grows.
So it's a flexible and efficient way to manage those ever-growing mountains of data.
Exactly. And speaking of efficient ways to manage data, let's circle back to those semi-structured formats we touched upon earlier. JSON and XML. They both use tags to add structure to text files, but what are the key differences between them?
I'm all ears. They both sounded pretty similar to me.
Well, both JSON and XML can represent data in a hierarchical way, kind of like a family tree, but they have distinct syntax and use cases. JSON is known for its simplicity and readability. It's easy for both humans and machines to understand.
So JSON is like the minimalist, clutter-free approach to organizing data.
Exactly. It uses a straightforward key-value pair structure, making it very efficient for data exchange, especially in web applications. XML, on the other hand, is a bit more verbose. It uses a system of opening and closing tags to define data elements, which can provide more detailed information, but also adds overhead and makes files larger.
It's like the difference between writing a concise email and a formal letter with all the bells and whistles.
That's a great analogy. And your source mentioned that XML was once the go-to format for web development. But JSON has become more popular in recent years.
Sounds like JSON is winning the popularity contest.
It is. JSON's lightweight nature and ease of use make it a favorite for modern web applications, especially when it comes to exchanging data between web browsers and servers. It's all about speed and efficiency these days.
So it's a classic case of technology evolving and finding more efficient solutions. But it's still helpful to know about both JSON and XML just in case, you know, we encounter them in the wild.
Absolutely. Understanding these different formats broadens your data literacy and allows you to work with data from, well, a variety of sources. It's like being a multilingual data explorer.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
Now I want to switch gears a bit and talk about a concept the source touched upon, dimensional data. What exactly does that mean, and why is it important?
Dimensional data is a way of organizing information for analysis, especially for businesses trying to understand their data and make better decisions. It's all about separating data into facts and dimensions.
Okay, break that down for me. What are facts and dimensions in this context?
Facts are the measurements or events that you want to analyze, like sales transactions, website visits, or customer interactions.
So those are the core data points we're interested in, the things we want to, you know, measure and understand.
Exactly. Dimensions, on the other hand, provide context about those facts. They're like descriptive attributes that help you slice and dice the data to gain deeper insights.
Give me an example.
Sure. Imagine you're analyzing sales data for an online store. The fact would be the sale itself, the date, the amount, the items purchased. The dimensions would be things like customer demographics, product categories, shipping methods, or even the marketing campaign that led to the sale.
Ah, I see. So the dimensions help you answer questions like, who are my best customers? What are my top selling products? Which marketing channels are most effective?
Exactly. By organizing data dimensionally, you create a structure that's optimized for querying and analysis. It lets you explore the data from multiple angles and uncover, you know, meaningful patterns and trends.
It's like having a multifaceted view of your data, like looking at a diamond from different angles to see all its brilliance.
That's a great way to put it. And your source mentioned something about fact tables and dimension tables. How do those fit into the picture?
Yeah, I was curious about those.
Well, in a dimensional data model, fact tables store the facts, those core measurements we talked about, while dimension tables store the dimensions, those descriptive attributes that provide context. They're connected through keys, which allow you to link related data.
So it's like a network of tables with the fact table at the center, surrounded by dimension tables that provide, you know, additional insights.
That's a great way to visualize it. And this structure makes it super efficient to query the data and generate reports. For example, you can easily find out the total sales for a specific product category in a particular region during the specific time period.
It's like having a powerful search engine for your data, allowing you to find exactly what you need.
Exactly. Dimensional data is all about organizing information for strategic analysis and decision making. No. It's like taking raw data points and turning them into actionable insights.
This is all incredibly fascinating, but I have to admit, my brain is starting to feel a bit full. We've covered so much ground in this deep dive.
I know, right? Data types, structures, file formats, object storage, dimensional data. It's a lot to take in.
It is, but it's so important to understand these concepts in today's data-driven world. Being data literate helps us, make sense of all the information we encounter every day.
I couldn't agree more. Data literacy is becoming an essential skill for everyone, not just data scientists or analysts.
Well, before we completely overwhelm our listener, let's take a little breather and come back for a final wrap-up.
Sounds like a plan. We'll distill everything we've learned and leave you with some, final food for thought.
Okay, and we're back for the final lap of our data deep dive. Ready to tie it all together.
Absolutely. It's been quite a journey, exploring this intricate world of data organization and analysis.
We started by, breaking data down into its fundamental building blocks, those tiny data elements and the different data types they represent.
Yeah, from there, we explored the realm of structured data, where information thrives in those neat and tidy rows and columns.
We also ventured into that, wild west of unstructured data, those images, videos, and audio files that just don't fit neatly into a spreadsheet.
Right. And we uncovered those secrets of semi-structured data, like emails, those hybrid creatures with a bit of structure and a bit of freedom.
We even learned about cool storage solutions like object storage. Imagine a virtual warehouse where each piece of data is like a neatly labeled package.
Exactly. And let's not forget those powerful file formats like JSON and XML. They're like, secret codes that help us move and analyze data efficiently.
But perhaps the biggest takeaway from this deep dive is, the sheer variety of ways we can organize and make sense of information.
It's like having a toolbox filled with all these different instruments, each designed for a specific, data-related task.
So what does all this mean for you, dear listener? Why should you care about, all this data stuff?
Because data is the lifeblood of the modern world. It's the foundation of decision-making in every field imaginable.
Understanding how data is, structured and analyzed, it empowers you. It makes you a more informed citizen, a more discerning consumer, and a more effective professional.
It's about being data literate. It's about being able to navigate the sea of information with confidence and clarity.
So the next time you come across data in a news article, a research report, or even, a social media post, just remember what we've discussed today.
Yeah. Think about the source of the data, how it was collected, and how it's being presented. Ask yourself, what insights can I glean from this? What story is this data trying to tell?
Don't just passively consume information. Engage with it, question it, and use your newfound data literacy to, make sense of the world around you.
Exactly. It's about becoming an active participant in the data conversation.
And remember, the journey of data discovery never truly ends. There's always something new to learn, a new insight to uncover.
Absolutely.
A huge thank you to our data expert for sharing their insights and, guiding us through this incredible deep dive.
It's been my pleasure.
And to you, our listener, thank you for joining us on this data adventure. We hope you've learned something new and feel inspired to, keep exploring this vast and fascinating world of information. Until next time, keep diving deep. And don't forget to subscribe for more knowledge adventures.